Hi, and welcome to episode number 144 of the weekly Google Cloud Platform podcast. I'm Mark Mandel, and as always, I'm here with my colleague, Melanie Warwick. How are you doing, Melanie?
I'm good, Mark, and I'm here. We're both here.
We're here. Sort of here. I'm at home. You're in the office. It's fine.
All right. Well, Mark, this week, we are going to speak with Terry and Taichi from Mercari. It's another episode that we recorded while we were at Next, and we were really glad to get them to come in and talk to us about their e-commerce platform that operates out of Japan, the U.S., and the U.K., and the story that they have around, you know, working with microservices as well as migrating services onto GCP.
Excellent. And as per always, we'll have cool things of the week and our questions of the week. And the question of the week will be, how do I use my existing identity management system with Google Cloud Platform?
That's a great question. As you mentioned, though, we're going to start out with cool things of the week. And one of them is a GitHub repo from Sarah Robinson from our team. She did a repo that basically helps demo AutoML and the integration with Firebase Storage. So if you wanted to experiment with querying a custom AutoML model from a web app, you can look at her example. This actually uses some of the data that she also did an example on earlier in the year when we talked about it during episode 108. And we also talked about AutoML at that time.
Oh, nice.
Another AutoML point that we wanted to cover is that there's this article and it steps through putting together an example of AutoML using data to help classify graffiti artists.
Yeah, it's really cool. It goes through basically how they used AutoML to take a bunch of data and sort of align it with particular artists, as well as how they improved it once they built it as well, which is kind of nice.
Yes. And then another cool thing of the week, we also want to mention Colt McAnlis, who's another one of our teammates, and he has recently published another Performance Atlas videos, great video series as he's been putting out there. In this one, he says he is helping cryptocurrency fans with their data store transactions.
Hitting the buzzwords. He's hitting the buzzwords.
He's totally hitting the buzzwords.
It wouldn't be a podcast episode if I didn't talk about Kubernetes. So I'm really excited about this too. So there's a blog post discussing basically deploying only what you trust, introducing binary authorization for Google Kubernetes Engine. Basically, this is all about how do I trust what is running on my production infrastructure? So making sure that only the things that you want to have running on your Kubernetes clusters are the things that are running on the Kubernetes cluster. I mean, this could be a whole episode in it to itself, but there's a couple of really cool things in there. They have image and repository whitelisting as a great way of basically saying, here are the things that the images that you can send using matching scripts to be able to do that, but also signature verification for pod generation too, and ways to do that.
What does that mean?
Basically, they verify signatures against the images that are running against the container analysis API. But there's also open source ways of doing this, too. It goes into all the details. It's really, really nice. I like this article a lot.
And there's some nice animated visuals in there as well.
Yeah. So whoever wrote the blog post, it looks like Zhenying Sandriguao, if I'm pronouncing that even vaguely right. Nice job on the diagrams.
All right, Mark, I think it's time for us to go speak with Taichi and Terry.
Sounds good. Let's go do it.
We are happy to have with us today Terry Lee and Taichi Nakashima, who are both from Mercari. And we are grateful that you guys were able to join us here at Next. Thanks for coming.
Great. Thank you. Great to be here.
So, Terry, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do at Mercari?
I'm an engineer at Mercari. We are working on this microservice thing to migrate our backend from a monolithic infrastructure to a microservice architecture. So we are actually just starting on that, and Taichi here is building that platform to, you know, run microservices, and I'm on a team that's trying to rewrite the backend into microservices that's running on that platform.
Great. All right, so Taichi, outside of what Terry's already shared, what's your background?
So I'm a software engineer at Microservice Platform team. I'm building the platform top of the Google Kubernetes Engine, so that backend engineer like Teddy to easily to deploy the microservice.
Great. So actually, for people who aren't familiar with Mercari, what is it? What does it do?
So Mercari is C2C marketplace. So user can sell their stuff on our marketplace and buy it from their smartphone.
And originally, it's based in Japan?
Yes, it's based in Japan.
But it's also accessible in the US?
Yes.
We have millions of users in the US.
Yeah, I was going to say, can you share how big is the platform? Like how many people use Mercari, in broad sense at least?
So we have millions of daily active users in Japan. It's like a huge thing in Japan to sell your used books and stuff. We're not that big in the US, but we also already have tens of millions of downloads already. So it's growing very fast, and we are excited to see how it's going in the coming years.
Nice. And what are some of the other markets that you're in?
We also have the app in the UK.
And what are some of the things that people would sell on?
It's kind of everything in Japan. Recently, yeah. We started doing even like cars and stuff. It's bit complicated.
Oh, cool. Yeah. That's really interesting. So have you always been on Google Cloud, or did you migrate from somewhere else?
So all the Mercari is running on the on-premise, yep. Japanese provider. So we are trying to migrate from on-premise to the GCP platform now.
Right. And you've specifically, I think you said as well, you said specifically you're working on GKE or Kubernetes Engine as the platform doing that. Can you tell us a bit more about how that's going?
His team actually started working on that platform that utilizes GKE and other GCP products to, you know, allow us to develop services on that platform. So on my team, we are trying to deploy new microservices into that platform. And so far, it's been going well, I'd say. We have a couple services running on it. It allows the developers to, you know, iterate on their services in a much faster speed without relying on, you know, SRE team to deploy their code for them.
Great. What made you decide to use GKE?
So we want to deploy the application as a container, because in microservice world, each service team should have the freedom to choose a tool or a software programming language. So infrastructure point of view, so if it's everything is packed as a container, it's easy to handle, because we don't need to take care about the application is written in Ruby or Python or Go, so we want to use a container. So for deploying the container, I think currently the best choice is Kubernetes, and the best management service is GKE, so that's why we chose the GKE.
Did you have any challenges with implementing GKE?
Challenges? On GKE or Kubernetes, we can do anything. So, for example, if we don't use the namespace, so everything goes to the default namespace and it's getting the complex.
Yep.
Everything is one namespace, so we need to set up the clear namespace for each microservices. Also, we need to provide the proper authorization to the each microservice team, so we need to set up some RBAC, and this stuff is a challenging point for us.
Yeah. Do you automate any of that? Like, do you do like a continuous integration? Like, it sounds like if you're nodding at me, so I'm going to go with you're probably doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we use a lot of tools to automate that. For example, we never actually go to GCP console to actually activate, you know, by clicking a button, but we use Terraform to, you know, define what we need. We use Spinnaker to actually deploy our container to GKE. Yeah, things like that.
Well, great. So what are some upcoming products that you're excited about in regards to the current platform that you've built or your current setup?
I'm excited about GKE on-prem that you guys just announced, because we actually had some challenges, you know, interacting between our on-prem data center with the services in GKE, and having to deploy some service in GKE and maintain some legacy system in the on-prem data center is a kind of a burden. So if we have GKE on-prem, you know, we could deploy all that microservices both in, you know, GKE and in the data center, so that developers can focus on their business logic and the deploy can be done to both sides.
That's really cool. I'd love to go back to what you were talking about before as well. You were talking about sort of using Spinnaker and that kind of stuff. I think for people who are potentially thinking about like CI/CD pipelines, how have you found that experience using Spinnaker? I assume you use something for testing as well. Like, how does that normally look inside what you've built?
So the reason to choose the Spinnaker, in microservice, each backend service engineer need to handle deploy themselves, right? So in monoliths, maybe central operation team is doing this stuff, but microservices, each team need to do this. So we need some way to easily set up the deployment pipeline. And in kubectl, if you run kubectl apply, we can deploy. But if just kubectl, it does not make sure the deployment is worked or not. So because of some resource quota shortage, maybe deployment may fail. But if only kubectl, it's difficult to find the deployment is failed. We need to check by kubectl describe or this command. So that's why we need some the special tool for deployment. And we found the Spinnaker is easy to create the deployment pipeline. And it also checks the kubectl apply is works or not. And if deployment fail, it's fail pipeline. So that's why we choose Spinnaker for deployment.
So do your developers have like a specific place they have to like put code? Like if I'm a developer working on Mercari and I'm like, I wrote some code, how does Spinnaker find it and like how does that flow look?
We use GitHub to, you know, manage our code. And so every code change goes to GitHub. They will open, you know, a pull request. They can configure their CI tool to build their image
Yes.
for that PR. And their image will be pushed to GCR. And Spinnaker has the ability to, you know, listen to a repository and find the, you know, images defined by, you know, some regular expression, so it can automatically find the Nice. Image that's updated for this application, and you can choose to automatically deploy that image to GKE.
In the pipeline that you have, is there anything you wish someone would build that would make it easier?
There's one interesting story about, you know, having that ability to, you know, just make Spinnaker listen to some repository and deploy stuff. It used to be not working, right? And then starting from one day, I think a few months ago, it suddenly started working. So it automatically built all the images in that repository to the cluster. So it's trying to deploy like all the historical versions of all services. That Oh. was terrible.
But it's fine now. You sorted it out now.
It's fine now, yeah.
It's good.
And currently, everything needs to be configured by a GUI. So we won't manage the Yep. pipeline in code so that it's easy to manage. We can review changes. So this is what we want.
That's what you need?
Yes.
That's good to know. We're doing this at Next. Outside of seeing the on-prem for GKE, what else have you seen that you've been excited about?
I'm excited about the AutoML stuff. I mean, I'm not an expert on machine learning, but I used to play with it. And I spent a lot of time, you know, trying to build a simple model. And seeing that being automated and seeing like I can train a model in like a few clicks, I think it will save a lot of effort for many machine learning engineers. And I think it'll also like allow people from like business intelligence team to be able to, you know, analyze our log and automatically find interesting conclusions of our, you know, user behaviors, which is exciting to me and to the team, I guess.
So do you have certain ways right now that come to mind on how you'd want to implement it once it's made available?
I can easily imagine, like, because our logs are already in BigQuery, and I saw a demo of building models based on BigQuery data, I can imagine, like, people without machine learning skill easily, like, do like user classification or some, you know, analyze some user behavior based on the AutoML technology.
Based on your specific experiences with your user base and the content that you have on your users. Yeah, that would be wonderful, especially in terms of being able to specialize your interactions with them. I know that's a leading need for many customers out there.
What about you? What have you happened to say that you've been particularly excited about?
I'm excited about the cloud service platform, CSP. I don't know the exactly what it is, but I saw the line about the managed Istio. For microservice platform, I think the Istio will be the key technology, so I want to use Istio, so I'm very excited, yes.
Istio is very valuable for being able to track, especially with so many systems and distributed, yeah, for tracking how performance is happening.
So I'd love to go back to and hear more about how your migration is going, because it sounds like you've gone from on-prem monolith to cloud microservices in one go? Is that accurate, or how's that journey been?
We started doing it, and we have deployed some services on JKE, but the majority of the backend is still in our data center, and will probably take some much longer time to do that.
How have you been tearing it apart? Like, have you just, like, what are you doing there? How's that working?
We try to find the most important or the most fundamental services, like user services and like item services. For us, an item is something that a user tried to sell. Like finding these most fundamental services and make them as microservices so that, you know, some other team can, when they need a new feature, they can utilize these services to build new features. So we start from there and we'll try to move as much as the system to JKE as possible.
And why are you doing this?
I think we are at a point where we have more than 100 engineers working on the same repository, and it's like 500,000 lines of code to make a simple code change. To modify some part of the feature, you'd have to deploy the whole thing, and, you know, fingers crossed, nothing breaks.
Because it never does.
Right, exactly. So I think that's the main reason, to make our organization more scalable.
Why the cloud? Because like, you could do microservices on your own hardware. Why are you coming to the cloud?
The reason the cloud. So as I said before, each developer need to operate their service. It's same as they also need to operate the database itself. So we want manage everything in on-premise is super hard for normal developers. If we use the cloud, they have useful API and the developer easily to set up the database or these managed services. So that's why we need move to the cloud.
Nice. How are you controlling what developers are able to do what? Are you just like, they can do anything, it's fine? Or are you being a bit more restrictive?
As Terry said, we use Terraform to set up the cloud services. So currently, we manage the whole Terraform configuration in one repository. We prepare a directory for each microservices, and each microservice team try to send a pull request to this directory. And the microservice platform team is always review that code, and we check the developer does not do the very strange stuff or this one. So we try to limit that way.
You've already talked a little bit about this in terms of the value of having microservices, but if you were to do this all over again, like tips, ideas, lessons learned that you'd recommend?
Start from the cloud. Don't make any monolithic. I mean, we started 5 years ago. My colleagues started 5 years ago. They probably didn't have the option to start from what we have here. That's why we're doing this.
Which is common.
Yeah, but there are definitely lots of people who are in similar situations. So if you were like, this is the best way we've worked out to be like, this is how we do the conversion of microservices, or like, don't do it this way, what would you recommend?
I feel like we are trying to make too many changes at the same time. Like, we're trying to rewrite the code from PHP with Golang. We're trying to deploy our services from, you know, on-prem DC to the cloud. And we're trying to migrate the database from there to the cloud as well. You know, the design is from a monolithic web app to a microservice architecture. So we're trying to make so many changes. I think the difficulty explodes and sometimes make things more difficult than it should be.
Before we let you both go, anything else that you wanted to share? Any places that people can find more information about Mercari outside of the website?
We have an engineering blog.
Oh, cool.
It's mostly in Japanese, though. So.
Hey, no, that's okay.
But we have English versions.
Yeah.
Oh. Japanese and English.
There's always Google Translate. It's fine.
Yeah, we'll point everybody to that. But yeah this is great. So we'll make sure to get the links from you and share that in the show notes.
Absolutely. What sort of stuff do you cover in the engineering blog? I'd love to know more.
The kind of technical stack we use to the life of engineer, and what is engineer manager, like the organizational things. Also to like sort of events we do. We do many events in Japan. So every time we do, we also announce in our blog.
What are some resources that you like to go to for help with some of the building out the stack that you have?
I always listen to this podcast.
I always start from Google. Google my problem and then it will lead me to the right place. Yeah.
Nice. Cool. Well, thank you. I appreciate both of you joining and thanks for sharing all your insights.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, thanks for great.
Thank you.
Thank you again, Taichi and Terry, for coming onto the podcast while we were at Next.
Yeah, really great episode. And thanks for sharing your journey as well, from building a monolithic application and then transferring that over to microservices and how that's going, and all the lessons you learned along the ways as well.
All right, Mark, how do I use my existing identity management system with Google Cloud Platform?
Yeah, I think this is actually a really interesting question too. I didn't even realize this was a thing, really. So basically, by default, Google Cloud is tied to Google accounts. That's kind of how it was built. But you may have your own identity management system. Maybe use LDAP or probably some other things that I'm not even aware of. And you may want to use that instead, or basically integrated with Google Cloud, so that you don't have to reinvent the wheel, essentially, which I think is really cool. So there's an article that we will link to. We'll give you sort of the top level highlights here that I think are most important. But the great thing is you can do this. So if you have an existing identity management system, you can integrate this thing. There are a set of prerequisites to getting started. You need to identify a domain that you'll use to set up your cloud identity account. You'll need to make sure that you have someone who can make text or CNAME changes to your DNS settings. And also to allow your users to authenticate against your identity system, you'll need to implement a SAML single sign-on. We'll talk a little bit about that too. So if you can do those three things, you can configure the ability to use third-party identity management.
A couple other things we want to mention from the article as well is that they recommend doing a proof of concept to basically, you know, don't synchronize everything all at once. Try synchronizing a small number of users or a small group and experiment with that first to make sure that your criteria and your configuration is properly set before you do synchronization. They also mention, you know, you don't need to necessarily map your entire organization. It's important to plan what you really need to synchronize and then go from there. You know, they do have some pointers around mapping out the functional roles for your users and creating groups to map to those roles. You know, grant roles to a Google group instead of to individual users when possible, because it's easier to add and remove members from a group than it is to update the, you know, IAM policy itself. So those are some tips. And they also do not default transfer passwords. They will do the transfer of the users, but the passwords themselves are not necessarily synced up on default.
And it's worth noting that there are two different ways of doing the synchronization. There's Google Cloud Directory Sync, which will sync on a schedule, but then you can also have third-party identity providers do a direct connection as well. Each kind of has its pros and cons, depending on what systems you already have set up, how easy it is to use third-party, or whether you just want to do regular syncs on a regular basis. But you can look at both options as well.
And, you know, the main thing to note is that I know it's difficult to spend time when you've got so many other things going on to think about identity management, but it's really crucial and it's useful and it's important. And resources like this are helpful in trying to make it a little easier for you.
Awesome. Well, Melanie, I know you're running off to the airport at some point soon. I know I'm running off to the airport at some point soon. What are you up to? Where are you going? What are you doing?
I'm just doing some training this week. But where are you going to be, Mark?
So when this comes out, I will still be at PAX Dev, and then I'll be hanging out at PAX West for a good chunk of the rest of the week.
For those listeners who don't know, what is PAX?
PAX is an 80,000 strong gamer conference. So PAX West, this is the big PAX conference. The several days before is PAX Dev, which is a game developer conference. So everyone gets together, talks about making games. I'll be talking about Agones, which will be fun. A couple of weeks after that, I will be up at Japan Next, also talking about games and Agones and chatting with a bunch of customers and stuff. So that'll be fun. First time in Tokyo, so I'm quite excited.
That's your first time in Tokyo?
My first time, yeah.
Well, for me, in September, I'm going to be in Stellenbosch.
Nice.
Which is outside of Cape Town, and I'm going to be at Deep Learning Adaba. It's a conference on machine learning, and the plan is for me to do a couple of interviews for the podcast out of Stellenbosch. And then after that, Mark, you and I are going to be at Strange Loop, where we will also be doing another podcast recording that I'm looking forward to.
Awesome. Well, Melanie, thank you for joining me on the podcast once again this week.
Thank you, Mark.
And thank you all for listening, and we'll see you all next week.